All right, well, why don't we go ahead and call the meeting to order. Has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes?
I understand we edited something.
We did one edit on the previous minutes that had been sent out.
Oh, that was on the previous one.
Yeah, okay, resolve that.
Yeah, okay.
So if that's okay with everybody, we'll just consider those adopted. Well, tonight, we're fortunate to have Chief Collins with us. It's a commitment, it's a commitment we made at the joint meeting, but it's something we've discussed as a CAG, having the opportunity to bring the chief in. We thought we'd give you about 20 minutes to settle into your new position and before we began our discussion. So we're awfully glad to have you here this evening. And can you start, just so everybody kind of hears a little bit about your experience? Can you kind of give us kind of a snapshot of where you've been and what you've done prior to arriving here?
Sure. One, thanks for having me in. I think, like was mentioned at the joint meeting, you guys have done some phenomenal work thus far, and that's a whole lot of stuff going on. So definitely appreciated anything that can help a roadmap forward. What may or may not happen is a good thing. So a little bit about my background. I've been in emergency services since way back. Did professional ski patrol when I was younger, worked through college that way. My wife and I went to the University of Oregon. I realized that it's a good thing Duncan's not here because that's
the stopper.
Exactly. So let's see, I got my paramedic back in like 87. Worked at the private ambulance company for about 6 years, was a field training officer in Northeast Portland. Then I got picked up by the fire department. I had looked at a couple different departments. Worked for 12 in Valley Fire and Rescue for about 19 years. Worked my way from entry firefighter paramedic all the way up through lieutenant, captain, battalion chief, division chief. And when I got the opportunity to be chief for Sabi Island Fire, I was a division chief over logistics, which was fleet facility, communications, IT, and supply. So Tualatin Valley is the second largest department in the state of Oregon. It's the largest combination department. When I was there, we had 26 stations, protected 210 square miles with 450,000 residents. We're now approximately 40,000 calls. It is a combination department, but does not transport. Transport is provided by ambulance service contract with a private agency. So ran the logistics portion, was a line battalion chief. I also ran the volunteer program, which had 100 volunteers under me at the time. Sabi is the opposite end of that spectrum. It is an island, runs about 150 calls a year, had me as the CEO, chief, and then I had some administrative staff as well. It is an all-hazards department and doesn't transport either. So the transport side of things is all from the private agencies when I did that. But at the same time, when I was with Tualatin Valley, we were going through the should we look at ambulance transport at the time. And I was worked with a group that was putting that together. And as it transpired, the local group that read the ASA said it should go to Tualatin Valley. The national group said it should go to Tualatin Valley. And then when it went before the county council, the heartstrings got pulled and they said, no, don't go with them. So, but I've always worked as part of a system for EMS, for fire, and always looked at what's best for the community, for the citizens and the people that work the line. So in addition to that, outside of it, I have a master's in psychology with organizational leadership as my focus, so motivation, recruitment, retention, and the like. I sit on the volunteer combination officer section for the International Association of Fire Chiefs. I've been on that for 6 years, the secretary treasurer for 3 of those 6 years, and I've worked and present nationally on leadership, recruitment, retention, and kind of putting systems together and working with organizations through strategic planning and then long-term planning and systems and how they work better together and get people to work collectively. So a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, and then I was in the Navy as a combat medic. I've done a lot of different things over my time. So trying to boil it down for you into a nutshell of what might be important to you all, I think that kind of covers it. And open dialogue is where I'm about. So If you have any questions, by all means, let me know. I will do the best I can to answer.
Well, thank you. That's excellent because, A, the diversity of your experience is really relevant to a number of issues that we've discussed here. And then I understand you've listened to the minutes from all of our previous mm-hmm. meetings. Mm-hmm. So you pretty much know the general direction of
the discussion. I have a sense, but I wouldn't say that I know because there's the minutes and then there's the other aspects, and a lot of it is you do work outside of it. So yes, I've listened to it, have a sense of, visited with people inside, outside, and then just trying to get that holistic sense for the community and the players. And that's a whole bunch of stuff outside of minutes as well, right? So,
are you saying my minutes are not perfect, Chief?
I'm saying they're damn good.
That's what I thought you were saying.
That's what I heard.
You know, there's always a difference between the movie and the play.
Exactly.
I hope he just read the minutes. He didn't listen to the tapes. I was going to say, wow, because you read, you listened to the tape.
That I did not.
We didn't lift that board.
You do that on a road trip.
Yeah.
Yes, that is when you're trying to sleep and can't. But no, I read it. That's correct.
And then also, as you've settled in now, you've had meetings.
2 months.
Yeah, I mean, you've already had meetings with a number of the other elected officials and You mentioned to me you had been to a chief's meeting.
Yes, the county chiefs, yes. Then, they were nice enough to make sure that I kind of met all the other players in the county, been to the county chief's meeting. And as I'm learning what Chief Creasy used to do, and I'm absorbing those, I guess I'm the secretary treasurer for county chiefs as well. But, you know, working on things, trying to make things work collectively, that's what's best for the community and the citizens. So as an example, right before I even got here, the departments are in need of replacing their SCBAs, right? Their self-contained breathing apparatus. So the discussion was, should we put in for a national grant of the assistance to firefighting grant process? So talking with Brad, because obviously I'm going to be here as he's transitioning out, and through our discussion, I said, well, why don't we look at it from a regional grant? There's more money in it. It's looked on more promisingly at the national level. So we worked together to put in a regional grant so the entire county, if it's awarded, will be able to replace all of the SCBAs on that national grant. And so it'll take care of us, Shaw, Orcas, and Lopez, all under one grant. And the discussion came down of, hey, but from the numbers we're looking at, we could only have one quantitative fit device. So that's to make sure that the masks work and protect as they should. Well, those run about $10,000 per machine. And the initial thought was, well, each department needs one. I go, why? We should have one and share the resource between all of them. Oh, you think we should? I go, put it out to the group and let's see what happens. So the other three chiefs are like, oh, that's a great idea. Let's do it. So it was pinned that way. And so that's how it was submitted. So trying to work collectively was a good thing. So we'll see if that plays out. But that was before I even got up here. I had a phone call from Chief Creasy that said, hey, what do you think? Should we go for a regional? I said, absolutely. So trying to learn and get into the middle of it right off the bat. So yeah, Chiefs meeting, trying to meet different players. Actually, I'm going to swing over to the hospital on Friday, meet the ER staff, get to know Dr. Sullivan a little bit. I've reached out to him. On the EMS side of things, I've been a CPR instructor forever. And right before Christmas, they were updating their mannequins. And so I said, updating the mannequins, tie into the system. I'll go over and do that training with them. So I'm, you know, trying to interact and meet a few of the other people over there as well and just being engaged in the system, regardless of how things play out, I'll be involved somewhere along the line because I obviously have passion for EMS and taking care of our community. So I hope that answers what you were looking for.
Yeah, it does. Thank you. Well, we have a very free-range group here. This is always more of a discussion than anything else. So do we want to just kind of jump in to do Do we have some questions to start with the chief?
Oh, you're done.
As we're beginning to. Well, we're at this point now where we've had a number of discussions with some of the departments relative to best practices and trying to find some better apples-to-apples comparisons. So maybe as you start to look at both the current EMS system and the way fire is run right now, are you starting to see some beginning opportunities to work collaboratively? And is there a way to get there in the short term as well as you're starting to look forward?
There was probably three questions in there. A simple answer to your statement and question is yes. Looking inside fire, looking at how EMS is structured right now for the region, I think that there's some definite potential to develop and do some changes. I think that if you look at the bottom line, and if the goal, and I know from visiting with leadership and with the boots on the street on both sides, the goal is taking care of the citizens the best way possible. And that in and of itself is a partnership. So how do you create something that looks at both organizations? Because realistically, if it's a complex call, we're all going. It does right now. There's a traffic accident, there's a cardiac arrest, there's a house fire. We all need to go. So why not work and think of things collectively on how we take care of everybody? Because the better and the more you can look at, as opposed to one side of the house taking care of EMS and one side of the house taking care of fire and never the two cross, how does that benefit the citizens in the end? Because, yesterday, there was an all-call for an ALS call. Well, both fire and EMS are going together. Well, those are some of the opportunities I see regardless of how do you work collectively, and as we spread out and look at where the members are, and then just from a simple inside look, there's a lot of EMS members that are fire service members, there's fire service members that are EMS members, and the pager goes off when we go to take care of the citizens. So wouldn't it be cool if we could capitalize on some of that and look at things strategically for the island, and then greater as the case may be, in coming together to best serve the citizens. So yeah, I've seen some opportunities that we can capitalize on. It's just a matter of looking at how do you do that best. And that takes time and focus and actually see where all the puzzle pieces are. And it takes a little bit of time to analyze the data as how to do that best. But I think there's some definite opportunities.
Yeah, and it's true also that if you expand that circle out a little bit, the same is true for other islands and our ability to be able to work together given any circumstance, because there's not a lot of other ability to look for agency assists.
I mean, right. We are an island, truly, both figuratively and realistically, and so we need to look at how do we do that. You know, you look on a fire site, you look at anything major, we have to work collectively. So, Orcas, Lopez, all of those are our mutual aid and vice versa. When they do their bangs, we go over and cover. Well, we need to start thinking greater than ourselves if we're going to truly take care of our citizens from a healthcare perspective, a fire perspective, because both groups, the bottom line is what do we need to do to take care of the citizens? Regardless of what it is, because when the citizen picks up 911, they just want someone to come and help them. And that's our obligation. And I know from visiting with both sides, that's what the mission and the focus is. So however we can do that best is what we need to do, in my own opinion.
So you said down in the larger department there in Oregon, there was sounds like several reports that were done suggesting that the transport portion of EMS get moved in with fire. What did they identify as the challenges to do that? And were you, as in your role, are prepared to tackle those? I know you weren't the chief, but you were high up in management, so I'm assuming you were involved with, okay, if it does come, we need to work through these issues. What were those issues, and how were you guys preparing to address them?
I think one of the biggest ones in that area is the private companies, and they had consolidated some of the private companies. So originally there were four different private agencies that did all transport for all of the Portland Metroplex. Well, over the years, it became two that really provided the transports. Metro West, which took care of the west side, and then AMR, which took care of taking over Buck Ambulance, A Ambulance, and Carry Ambulance, which was basically the city of Portland and the east side suburbs. So it was very entrenched private agency. So the concerns that were coming into play when that transition was contemplated was, okay, so you take a private ambulance company and you go over to a fire-based EMS, which already had 100% ALS staffed engines. Everything had at least one paramedic on it. So engines had a paramedic on it as well as full staffing. All trucks did, the rescues did. And that was kind of a direction that the Portland Metroplex went to take care of the citizens. So from a fire standpoint, all we needed was a box ambulance to provide the transport. So some of the challenges that we looked at politically was we have a group of workers that may not have positions, right? So some would have to absorb in, others wouldn't. Looking at it, and this was for the 911 generated call specifically. It did not carve out the code one inter-hospital transfers, the care facilities to hospitals, where if you look at the private agencies, that's where their bread and butter money is, right? But they don't do that solely because you can't attract paramedics to that kind of system because who wants to drive a wheelchair car and a loved one from hospital to care home and back again? They want the flash. They want the 911, the lights and siren and the such. So if you don't have that component, even though that's the least amount of revenue collection, well, they can't maintain their people, right? So we wouldn't have had to have brought over all of them. So that was one of the challenges. What do we do with the people? Because it's about the boots on the street and the people, and it impacts lives, right? So the other side was, since fire wasn't at the time managing the transport and the collection of the fees, how was the structure going to be put into place to collect the transport fees? How was that structure going to come into play? How did you work within the hospital system and the insurance system to collect? And then what did you do with the residual? Because the Metroplex doesn't have an EMS levy, so everything is predicated and based on transport fees, unlike here. So that whole discussion came into play. How do you balance it out? And how do you actually look at it politically that if you take over that side of the business, do the citizens say, okay, fire and our fire tax is going to supplement that lack of collection? And so those were some of the contemplation pieces that they had. But on the fire side, since we were already doing ALS trans or ALS response anyway, we already had it into the system that if the ambulance company got down to level zero, meaning there were no ambulances available in the system, we already had seven ambulances available to transport and it was already in the system. So all we would have to do is pick up and do it, right, and then figure out the rest. And we had a plan for the quote figuring out the rest. But the system had built in time. When that didn't occur and the privates maintained the contract, we said, okay, that's okay. But we need to do something systematically to make sure that the ambulance service fees go back into system development fees to make sure that the citizens benefit in the long run. So some of those ambulance fees went back into developing the concept of community paramedicine, to develop the concepts of how do you work better in partnership? How do you, as the fire services responding with ALS apparatus, if you get on the scene first, it stops the response time clock, which then indirectly helps the transport agency meet their response times of 90% within 8 minutes or whatever your catchment zone was. So really, we took the opportunity that even though we didn't get transport, to really, how do we work better as a system to take care of the citizens? And that's kind of in a nutshell without answering specifics, Mark. If you've got specifics, I'll try to welded for you if you need to go deeper, like to go deeper than that.
No, I think that addresses it. I mean, it's just one of the things that obviously comes up when you look at a potential to consolidate, merge, whatever you want to call it, two organizations. There's a fear that there might be positions lost,
right,
people's jobs are at stake, so on and so forth. That always comes up.
Right.
And depending on what we recommend, we want to recognize that and make it so it's well known, because that is something that you hear right now from the different people within the agencies. There is a concern on what it means for jobs.
What I would say in the big scheme of things, though, that's different from that situation to here is we need the people, right? So I don't, looking at it from both sides, go back to what Chuck had kind of teed up in the first place, looking at it on both sides, because a lot of the personnel are on both sides of the coin, we need the people, especially the boots on the street, people that are doing the response. Yes, we may be able to have some opportunities to redirect some of the people into some things that might benefit more, and this is something that would take time to develop, because if we look at things from what the community might need, do we have a need for more community paramedics? Do we have a need for some more mobile health care concepts? Well, that might be able to shuffle some of the people, because the more I think about things, and like I mentioned before, it's about taking care of the citizens and the people. I think for the most part, we need the bodies and we need the people, especially the concerns on the boots on the street. And however it plays out, we need to make sure that in a small community like ours, that the livelihood of the individuals are taken care of, because you can't just upset them in the overall making things better, because it actually creates additional problems and we need to walk into it. So it's completely valid. And from a psychological perspective, any change is scary, because people get comfortable in where they are and what they do. So all that needs to be contemplated, and you need to walk into it in time. But I, just looking at cursorily, I don't know everything on the EMS side. But my gut tells me, with looking at numbers, looking at call volume, and looking how things are displaced right now, we're gonna need the bodies. So I think that that reduces the, oh, well, you need to upset, like, get rid of 50% of them. I don't think that's a reality for this community and for this service, as we're looking at, which was very different than the Portland system. They may have lost 50%, but not here at all. Not at least as I'm looking at it cursorily, my side.
Chief, setting aside the issue of the private ambulance service and whether or not that was going to get merged, did you ever get involved in any kind of an annexation of a city fire department or something with the county or with any other agencies that ended up getting merged? And what were the challenges you ran into there, maybe besides jobs and who got lost and not in shuffle?
Yeah, absolutely. I went through a few. So not with EMS to fire, but with fire.
Yeah.
So a little demographics about Tualatin Valley. It covered 210 square miles, as I said, portions of three different counties and nine cities. So all of those cities, and when I first came on, the city of Beaverton was contracting with the department or with the district for service. And then the longer I was there, we brought West Lynn in, and then we also explored Oregon City. Well, West Lynn became part of the district, Beaverton became part of the district, and Oregon City went to Clackamas. And there's reasons why we didn't want to touch Oregon City. But the challenges that you have when you try to bring a city into the district, cities have a lot of pride around their fire department, especially if they were providing it themselves and the district's not contracting it. So that's the first step. That's not here. The other side is when you truly annex, both from a political standpoint, from the vote. So you have to, as you all know, you have to have the votes for current district and city. That has to pass. But the other piece is, and this is where it becomes very political and very strategic in how you address it. The cities like Beaverton that was contracting out, which is very similar to Freddie Harbor contracting out, the citizens, whether they understand it or not, are already paying the levy rate for the fire department, right? So from that standpoint, the numbers don't change from that. What changes is by code, the city doesn't have to reduce their income. So then that becomes, how do you politically deliver that message to the citizens on the benefit from the city perspective? And you don't want to get into, pardon my French, a pissing match, because from the fire side, you're already paying it. So it's not us, it's them. Really? It's, you're going to serve the city and you just said it's an us and them. Mm-hmm. No, what I've seen, one city that had their citizens up in arms was the city didn't give anything back and gave no plan as to why they weren't giving it back. Nope, we're just keeping the money. That was horrendously bad. Another city gave 50% of it back. And the citizens like, okay, because the other 50%, the city said, we've been putting stuff off for the libraries and the parks and some of the road systems. And we're going to put that extra 50% into that, so we need to keep it. And the citizens was like, okay, that makes sense, and we're driving down the pothole stuff and we don't have libraries when people were using the libraries. And then the third one was, we gave everything back, and the citizens obviously were happy with that. And there's everything in between. It's how you message it, but it has to be in partnership with the city for it to be successful. And all of those were a successful annexation, and it worked fine.
And even the giving nothing back,
so 100% tax increase, basically, what that looks like.
And what we tried to do is soften to help the city, because we had to work with the city anyway, right? Because we're serving that population. And it came back later that when they had urban growth districts that really impact the fire side of things, because you can't collect off of that valuation levels, then they started working on stuff in partnership with us on making sure that when they wanted to go to narrow streets and they wanted to go to these things, that they came to us first, because we helped soften that message that says, we're going to provide the service that we always have. The city has plans, ask them about it. It's not an us against them, because we want to provide the service, but that was not a fun political time to wander.
Yeah, I like the messaging that says whatever we aren't getting back is going for this. Because then at least the tax increase they're going to receive is going for something they can relate to.
Correct.
Because if you don't make that statement, it's a little hard to swallow.
Right. Because there is that just proverbial distrust in government. Oh, you're keeping my money and you're going to put it into your salaries. Well, if you tell them there's a plan and you're honest about
the
plan.
Well, and it represents the tax increase to those citizens in the jurisdiction that are paying now a levy they didn't have to.
That is correct.
You're going to see that tax increase.
That is correct.
Yeah, but it's definitely part of that overall messaging.
Yeah, it's part of the message, and it has to be clear.
And it has to be clear, because people don't, a lot of people don't understand the jurisdictional boundary issues.
How long did it take to cycle through those issues and get it presented and get it approved?
Well, obviously, as we were planning before it ever went to the citizens,
before it got public.
I would say a real strong side of it, realistically, the one that went quick was about a year. The ones that we had a lot more messaging, because it's a larger area, took about a year and a half, year and three quarters to get it out there. But we had numerous town halls, numerous stakeholders meetings, and when you're trying to educate 450,000 people, that was a significant time commitment to do in town halls and otherwise, but probably anywhere between a year and three quarters.
Who led the charges?
It's a good investment.
What's that? Who led the charges?
The fire district led the majority of it, because people wanted to know service levels. And then the city managers would hop in and support when we were trying to say, okay, now we're going to turn it over to the city to tell you what you're going to get from them. But because it was purely a fire department from the citizens' perspective, they wanted to know level of service. And so from our messaging out, it was simple. Your service levels aren't going to change, because we're already strategizing delivery of the system already. So it was absolutely invisible to them. It was just a line item on their tax that was different. So the other transparency piece is, if you look at it from a department financial management standpoint, why would you ever take the city on outside of a contract? Because honestly, they write you a check for 100% of the levy rate. if you have it, you know you never collect 100% of the levy rate. But from a system perspective, it's way better if you manage all of it, because then you don't have to deal with secondary contracts and secondary layers, because when you say I'm providing the service, you manage the service holistically, and you don't have an additional counsel you talk to about the decision-making side. You keep them informed because you're serving the city, but you just manage your revenue stream a little differently because you know you don't collect 100%, where the check from the city is 100%. And I don't think the citizens truly understand that either.
I don't suppose they're that interested in the fact that as the city or whatever gets annexed, they now get to vote for their fire commissioners, which they never got to before.
Correct.
That probably doesn't really
no.
make much difference to them.
No, as long as when they dial 911,
yeah, somebody shows up
for an EMS problem, a fire problem, a rescue problem, a cat in a tree problem, it doesn't matter what it is, they've got leaking something, my child's finger is stuck in the grate, someone shows up and helps. Yeah. That's all they care about. But you're absolutely spot on. That now they actually have a voice.
Well, they're part of the district. Whether that means anything to them or not, I suspect it's pretty much lost in the noise.
Right. Correct. But that is very true.
Any of the departments that you worked with, did you do report cards to the taxpayers as far as levels of service that were achieved, call volume, reviews?
Yep. Fallen Valley did a standard cover document that was shared publicly at the same time they did their budget document. And it was the standard cover document was almost as thick as the budget document, which was like that much. And it talked about the different response zones, both from reflex time, so from the time 911 is dialed and tapped out, to how long it takes the people to get in the rig, to out the door, to travel time, and it was broken out by zones.
So you didn't do grids, but you did zones?
Zones. Yeah. And the reason you do zones is you can say I have an urban zone, a suburban zone, and a rural zone.
Yeah, right? That characterizes it more.
Right, and it's more appropriate. So if you were to look here, you should still have something like that, because you're going to have city and there's density, then you're going to have rural, and then you're going to have outer islands, right? So each one of those could be its own distinct response zone. Yeah. And then, yeah, you can drive data, and it went so deep as to a circle chart that had time of day and call volume by day of week. So it got way into it, and so that helps discuss how you deploy resources, both from an EMS standpoint. It also helped working with the private ambulance company for peak staffing-wise, because you could see, and yes, we know that it's a roll of the dice, and statistically people get hurt when they get hurt, and you can't say, I can pinpoint when we're going to have the massive fire, the earthquake, the traffic accident. That's not reality, but you can say, statistically, you have an uptick in calls at this time of day on this day of week, and so you want to strategize your staffing deployment plan around that type of model, and then hold yourself to benchmarks. Right, that's your report card side that you're talking about. So you look at the standard of cover that says our goal is within the urban zone, is we want to have from time of tap, and obviously there's the whole 911 side of it, how do they process? So you have to work with your 911 dispatchers to on scene within 4 minutes or 6 minutes. And then the ambulance side was you want an ambulance for transport on within 8 minutes is what the contract was. Well, we wanted a fire unit, ALS fire unit on scene within 4 to 6 minutes, 90% of the time. And so each year we would look at that and how are we needing it? Are we falling short in certain areas? Do we need to change that? Is that a realistic response time or otherwise? And we had required on the career side a 90-second reflex time. So when the bells go off, to in the rig, seated in gear, belts buckled, 90 seconds. I realize that NFPA says that you can do it in 60 seconds, that's a point of malarkey and not reality. And 90 seconds for a career department is about right. Mm-hmm. Of in gear, in the rig, seat belted, because NFPA and FDNY would say, we need it. No, you don't. Because I've seen you go down the road and you're still hopping on a half a block away running after. That's not appropriate reflex.